It will keep them from their potential. No matter what they've achieved, this person might be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. The reality is, if they're leading out of insecurity, they may have achieved a great position in an organization. We'll never know the true potential of that leader, because what if he or she could have led without that insecurity?
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is Tim Spiker. He is the founder of the Appirio, which is a debatable pronunciation, but I'm running with it, and the Who Not What Principle. It is a profound research-based truth that has powered 15 years of leadership development success. Tim's book, The Only Leaders Worth Following, and it's one of the only books worth reading, I might add, reveals that 77% of leadership effectiveness comes from who a leader is and not what they do. Using this principle, Tim helps people become, be, and stay leaders who are actually worth following. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thanks, Kenny. Excited to dig in here and especially to do this conversation with you.
Wow. I bet you say that to all the podcast hosts.
I don't. In fact, I'm not. You're the only one.
I am going to ask the tens of listeners to go out and fact check you. But we'll figure this out. The internet is undefeated. That's and true. It also doesn't lie. Everything on there is true.
Everything true. Yes.
So tell me today, Tim, what is on your mind?
Oh, man. Let's start with a broad question. Not too narrow.
We'll focus given, as time goes on.
Yeah. Given the title of the podcast and given the nature of the work that I do, it's not surprising, but it is truthful that leadership's never too far away from my mind. It doesn't matter whether I'm thinking about it with regard to the clients that we're working with or my own leadership with my kids and my family. It's just kind of forefront for me about 97% of the time. And so that's pretty much what's always on my mind.
Gotcha. So is there anything in leadership? I mean, obviously the book, which is fantastic, can't recommend it enough. The statistics are great. So I do love that it's science-backed. You have that and you promote that and you teach that because Lord knows more people need to get it. But in that's been around now for a little bit, is there anything that's evolving out of that research, anything out of the interactions you're having with companies, with leaders that are maybe some nuances and some new truths that you're starting to dig into?
Yes. I fear to share it because I don't want to give this three-part answer and everybody say, okay, great, I got it. And then we lose them for the rest of the podcast. But I will say,
just be very, very vague.
That's the problem.
That's what people pay for.
I have a super specific answer. Within the context of who you are, one of the things that I am noticing, and I truly don't think this is a sign of the times. I think it's probably more a stable reality that's probably present almost always, is that there are three aspects of who we are that just seem to continually come up both on the good and the bad side of leadership. So you can fail miserably in these three areas or you can succeed in these three areas and your leadership's going to go those directions. And those three things are courage, humility, and security. And when I say security, I'm essentially talking about the opposite of insecurity. Okay. I am continuously seeing, these three things just seem to be coming up more often than a lot of the other aspects of leadership that we talk about. And I've just been taking note of that recently. And by recently, I mean over the past few years, these just kind of be screaming out where a lot of the challenges and a lot of the successes that we see from leaders feel like they are connected to those three ideas.
Interesting. And you see those are being interwoven with the inwardly sound, others focus.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Elements. I'm curious, do you notice it in a more in a particular type of leader or level? You know, does it need to be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, or are you noticing these in VPs or mid-level managers, or, you know, where do you see it show up? Maybe most on display. Where do you see the glaring failures and glowing successes?
Yeah, I would say I haven't seen a distinction depending on level in an organization or size of organization. I've seen leaders in very kind of what we might call lower level or smaller teams who have those challenges. And then you turn around the next day and you'll see a CEO with the same issues. They just kind of show up a bit differently because the context is different. Mm-hmm. But it you know, kind of, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck and it smells like a duck, it's probably a duck. And you see some of those telltale characteristics of challenges, or it can go the other direction as well. I mean, because the downside is so bad, the good side, when it shows up, when you see those qualities lived out really well, it really stands out as well. So it really cuts both directions.
Gotcha. So what, if you have at this point, cause I know these are new thoughts, new observations, but if you had to venture a guess on what is the thinking that is happening in a leader's mind that leads to those items either not being present, or you have the, you know, the opposite, right? You contrasted security with insecurity. Yeah. You know, humility might be with ego and courage with cowardice. You know, I'll throw those words out there. Or quote me when you write your new book. But is there a particular way of thinking or a belief that these leaders are holding on to that lead to those great qualities not showing up, or at least not strongly?
Yeah, I think with regard to security and humility, or the opposite of those things, insecurity and arrogance, I think there is largely no thinking going on about those things and that's why they exist. They're there because the leaders are relatively blind to their lack of existence there. And so they don't really recognize the space that they're in. I think it's true with both. I think it's extraordinarily true with insecurity. I've run into some leaders in my best moments, which happen once in a while. I have a tremendous amount of compassion as I at times have gotten to hear the stories of really insecure leaders. When you hear the true narrative that's going on inside an insecure leader's head, it's heartbreaking. Yeah. It's so sad. And you all of a sudden you can start to think, like, what if at every turn I thought the people around me were talking badly about me? What if at every turn I thought every single person was second guessing me or believing that I didn't have the best interests of the organization or I didn't know what I was doing? And there are all these narratives. It's a tremendous, you know, exercise in story writing to knit together all of the data that's in front of you and come to the conclusion that everybody believes that I'm not capable, when in fact, you know, people aren't thinking you're the leader, but people aren't thinking about you as much as you think they are.
Right.
And you kind of, so you hear this. And so there's, because it's the soundtrack of their leadership, it's almost like the fish in water syndrome. They don't even know that there's a story that they're writing. They just kind of accept that story, or if it's just a more general kind of low self value, they're just so used to that song playing that they're playing that song, not others. They just, that's normal life. And it's just they frustrate the garbage out of us because they lead poorly and they do damage. And so that makes it really tough to have compassion. But if you were to really be able to read that novel of the ongoing dialogue inside the head and the heart of the insecure leader, it would break your heart to see what their regular existence is like. And I've seen that a number of times. And once you get past your frustration and start to see these leaders as actual people, then there's the opportunity for some compassion. But it's really sad at times.
Yeah, I can certainly see that. It, so does that then come down to a, it could be a lack of self-awareness comes to mind when you mention that, of that, like they think people are talking about them more than they're not, which, you know, like my kids will think people are talking about them. And I have to tell them, it's like, look, I love you. But you are not so special as to occupy somebody's every waking thought. Like that, that'd just be weird. Now I'm going to get emails about how I talk to my kids. but the other thing that, that I've been thinking about, and maybe this connects, is the idea of thoughtfulness and really what that means. And in this case, it, you said they're not thinking. So it's a thoughtlessness. It's maybe an insecurity. They're being inconsiderate and thoughtless towards themselves. Maybe they are aware of it.
Yeah. It's not often they are, because they can be aware of the narrative, but they're not aware that it's damaging or abnormal.
They're not tying that the narrative, the movie in their head, to the way that they're responding out in the world.
It's just normal life. They
link those two together.
No, they're like, this is just normal. They don't even, they oftentimes don't even know there's a different way. There's a different option. There's a different possibility.
So where does the responsibility lie then? Because in some cases, that person is the senior most person in the organization. They're the owner. They're the founder. They're the CEO. Mm-hmm. And you could say they don't answer to anybody, but at what point does it become like, yeah, they've had, like, it can be heartbreaking. You hear somebody's story of, you know, trauma suffered in childhood, yeah, and horrible things. And you can see there's a reason, but I more and more am coming to like a great reason doesn't excuse responsibility. So how do you think about that? Because obviously part of, you know, on the bio, right, where you're talking about how do you help people become and be and stay in that place of leadership? And that obviously that takes a great deal of healing and self-awareness. Mm-hmm. So how do you walk them through that? Do they just need to go outside the organization and get a coach?
That can be the answer, you know, and if, depending on what the damaging unit was, it might be a coach, it might be a psychologist, it might be a counselor. There's a lot of different things that come into play. I think if it's childhood damage, you know, I think you get a little bit of a, I won't say pass, but, you know, by the time you hit 30, if we're talking about childhood stuff, and I'll be careful here because I don't want to be too flippant. There's different levels of this sort of thing, right? So there's some things that people experience before the age of 10 that would be, you know, many lifetimes worth of trauma. But on your average story of how I ended up in this kind of relatively insecure place, I think at 30, like, you got to start taking responsibility for your own story. And if you've got things that are holding you back, like, it's to your point, like, there might be reasons, but we can't have excuses, because you're impacting other people and you have to take that responsibility. Now, in the stuff that happens later in life that somehow damages into that space, which I think is less frequent than things that get formed when you're younger, it's, again, that part gets a little bit difficult because it depends on how significant the issue was and when did it happen. Right. And so is it 1 year? Is it 2 years? Is it 5 years? It's tough to say because you don't really know what's feeding that. But I believe that most of the insecure self-talk story writing that goes on for leaders who are not secure and settled, most of that, I think, comes through a story that was built earlier in life in most cases. And the irony is, if they've been living with it, they've been leading past it in some ways, but it ultimately has, it will keep them from their potential, no matter what they've achieved. This person might be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. The reality is, if they're leading out of insecurity, they may have achieved a great position in an organization. We'll never know the true potential of that leader, because what if he or she could have led without that insecurity? What kind of health could have shown up for them and for the organization? And we don't always get to know the answer to that, unfortunately.
Right. It's one of those things, like, well, I guess we'll never know, is the absence of something, right? And yeah, and obviously, that's right. Even leading, someone may have done a great job and gotten to the place of leading in a Fortune 500 company, but it doesn't mean, like, everything outside of their life wasn't, you know, crashing and on fire.
Well, that sometimes that's the case as well. Yeah. And there are some people who will equate that Fortune 500 opportunity with, well, they must have been doing something right if they got there. And I think that that's a like a that's a fair pushback. But then I would just push back on the pushback by saying, what type of organization is it? You know, ultimately, there's tons of organizations that reward and recognize and lift up poor leadership because it was getting something else that they were after. And they, you know, everybody would say that they want great leaders, but when you look at the way they evaluate and develop and promote, you can't come to that conclusion. And so it is possible to rise through organizations based on things other than exceptional leadership, in which case sometimes then you end up with some pretty undeveloped leaders sometimes in very senior levels in organizations.
Right. And I know you mentioned that security and the humility or the lack thereof often are tied together, right? Because we've seen, you know, it's almost predictable to see a highly insecure leader comes across arrogant because they're compensating for that lack of security. So it's like playing poker. They're just bluffing to the max.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, what is your take on courage? Because that one may or may not be as directly linked. So what are your thoughts on what's happening in the narrative there?
I think that courage is a little more conscious when it comes to if I'm not stepping into the places where I need to. If I were really to kind of pause a little bit and say, well, I'm scared, I'm fearful, I'm concerned to the extent that it gives me pause and I don't move forward in the face of that fear. It's not always at the total forefront of consciousness, but it's a lot more conscious, I think, than the insecurity issue or, you know, oftentimes more than the humility issue. And so ultimately people have to decide, you know, who do I want to be? And oftentimes people will decide, I want to be a person who keeps my job. That's my highest priority, really. And I've been confronted with this issue and I'm afraid, or I want to keep my prospects here. That's probably the more common one. If I rock the boat now, my next two or three possibilities might evaporate. So I'm not going to. There's another avenue that doesn't have to do with self-preservation. For some people, they just feel ill-equipped to step into those more difficult or dangerous conversations. How do I do that? How do I do that well? How do I do that well and not misrepresent what I think, not let it get out of hand? We are in, I mean, currently, I would say around the world, but specifically we can talk about the U.S., we are in a time where it is sometimes, it seems like it's somebody's job to be sensitive about everything, which can make, which really ups the ante on courage, because that means every potentially minorly difficult conversation requires courage to step into it, because what's going to happen if we actually talk about, we don't even talk about the elephant, we could talk about the baby elephant and still have it be a kind of a dangerous thing. So some of it is in the space, I think, where people, for some people, it's, I don't really know how to do that. And I'm watching the world and I don't want whatever, you know, my company's version of getting canceled. I don't want to do that. So I'm not going to raise some of those issues. So I think there's a variety of things, but I do think on the whole, courage is more conscious of an issue to leaders than the other two that we were talking about earlier.
Now, I would agree with that. And you said something around courage where, you know, I'm fearful, like admitting it, where I think maybe that's where the interplay between humility and courage lie. I don't know many courageous people that don't also have humility, right?
That's a really interesting observation.
So you have to be able to say, I'm afraid I'm going to do this anyway. Because if there isn't even a little bit of fear, the word courage does not apply if
that's
it's
right.
a given.
That's right. 100%. That's true. And what's really interesting, if you think about that in terms of the development of other leaders, Kenny. So let's say that I am a person who is stepping into courageous acts as those present themselves to me as a leader. And so I am, in that sense, leading well. I'm willing to be courageous when I need to, whatever the circumstances might be. But if I'm not talking with the leaders I'm developing about the fear that I'm having to push through in order to do that, they will look at the actions and think, oh, that's just who she is. That's just who he is. He can just do that. No problem. I'll look at it. And so it really requires a kind of some level of vulnerable transparency with the people around us to say, hey, I did that. By the way, just FYI, that was really hard for me. But I raised that concern up the chain of command to the C-suite yesterday, and I'm glad it went well. But I had a little bit of, my boots were shaking just a little bit as I was heading into that conversation. And usually when people see accomplished leaders who have been successful and they say something like that, it's like, oh, really? I would have never guessed. I would have never known. And it's so helpful to humanize and normalize, which becomes really, really great from a development tool, because now that successful leader who was willing to be transparent can turn to the other person and they can actually have a dialogue about, okay, how did you work through that? How did you decide that you were going to lean into that difficult conversation or share that difficult piece of information up the chain of command? And they can actually talk about not only the content and delivery, but the mentality. What was going on inside of me to be able to say, yeah, kind of no matter the consequence, I need to step forward and step into this. And now you're developing who in somebody else. Whereas if we're not careful and talk about some of those things, we might only be leaning into the skill or what we might call the what of leadership, which is only 23% of leadership. And now we've really missed out on the ultimate opportunity to develop another leader. So that transparency, especially around courageousness, transparency and vulnerability become really, really important if I want to be a developer of other courageous leaders. Getting back to what you said, fear has to be present. Fear has to be present for courage to be there. And so if I want to develop courageous leaders, I've got to talk about fear. And usually that means I've got to talk about some of my own fears as well as I'm learning to be a courageous leader by example.
Right. Yeah. I know Simon Sinek said leaders eat last, but I think oftentimes they need to go first. Maybe not to eat.
Yes. The other stuff. Right.
Yeah.
First with vulnerability.
They lead with the vulnerability piece. I think that's interesting about the developing, thinking about your own leadership as a way of what am I transmitting to the world? Mm-hmm. And specifically my world of influence here, like my direct reports, my next level of leadership, and even peers, right?
Yes.
Is you're always influencing and adding or subtracting in your interactions, whether you like it or not. And that's what I hear from a lot of, new leaders is why are they? And I'm guilty of saying this too. Why did people pay so much attention to that thing I just said? And, I'll have a gracious, more tenured senior leader come alongside me and go, it's because you're in a position of leadership and the things that you say matter. Whether you were being serious or you were joking or something else, you now have to consider your words, not walk on eggshells, although, some days it can feel like that, but it just means that your words have weight and they have meaning and importance, and they can build up or they can tear down or they can communicate something you're not. And the building more who's, is interesting because I'm working on some content right now on conducting one-on-ones. That has become a question I'm hearing, from my clients and other people, is just those effective one-on-ones, building those individuals. And I think what you describe in being vulnerable, like you don't want to shake their faith in you. Like, I'm just an idiot and I don't even know what I'm doing. Like that level of self-deprecation, I think, is harmful to your ability to lead. But saying, "Hey,
well, it's probably not true." It's probably not true, right? So,
but what they do is they create that psychologically safe space for them to go. And more, that's what I'm noticing for effective one-on-ones that I've had, that I've been a part of, and what I've recommended to others. Is your first job is to create that safe space so that they can be honest, because then at that point you can speak into their life and their leadership and what's going on and that's where the development happens, at least in my observation.
No, I think that's
true. Is that something you see as well, or do you see something else working?
No. I think you're right. We want to relate to the people that we're following. I mean, ultimately, we're not following a corporate structure or a comp plan or a robot. We're following people, and we want to be able to follow people that we can relate to and connect with. And, getting to see some of that humanity is an important part of that. The you know, the idea of leaders having to be conscious of what they're putting out into the world. I think that, that, you know, we've got the old adage, I just wanted to put my two cents in. And the unfortunate or fortunate, depending on your perspective, reality with regard to leader is you, every time you're putting $1.50 in, even when you wanted to put 2 cents in, it just doesn't work that way anymore because you're in that position of influence. And it might be a little bit annoying, but it's a reality. With a client once, I heard a story. It's kind of sad and hilarious all at the same time, but a senior leader comes into a store. This is kind of a retail example, and they're speaking really demonstratively with the manager of the store. And others are like, you know, that peering around the, what is going on over there? Like they can't really hear what's going on, but they see the demonstration coming from somebody who has a high level of authority. And it turns out that it created some fairly meaningful consternation in the store to have somebody from the corporate office so demonstratively interacting with the store manager. The truth is that they were talking about fantasy football. They weren't even talking about anything to do with the business at all. And there were people in the store who were genuinely concerned.
Wow.
Because they were just watching the interaction. So you may hate the reality of that as a leader, but that doesn't make it any less reality is that we are being watched and we have a disproportionate level of influence, whether it's fair or justified or not. And those are things that we have to be conscious of and think about if we're going to lead well.
Gotcha. So if you were given an encouragement to a leader listening around those three elements, the courage, humility, security, is it just the being conscientious? Is that the thing you would think that they need to reprogram on? Or how should they be thinking, or how should any leader really be thinking about these principles, about how they're showing up? Right. Because obviously we can go into the inwardly sound, others focus. Those are great. And those are solid. But you got these other characteristics that sort of float through them. And exhibiting those values. Right. They're sort of.
These habits are more specific. All of this falls under the umbrella of those two categories.
Right.
And so when you look at courage and security. Then you're dealing on the inwardly sound side of things. If you're looking at humility, you're dealing on the other's focus side. I think to deal with these things, if I was going to provide a thought that would be encouraging, is it's a little bit different for all of them. You know, on the courage side of things, one of the things as we dive into conversations with the leaders we're working with, one of the most consistent realizations is that courage does not need to be a Herculean act in order to be courage. You don't have to save a baby from a burning building for it to be a courageous act. Any kind of step into something that creates, you know, conscious fear or discomfort qualifies as an act of courage. And frankly, those are the things that happen more often. It isn't that often that the building's actually on fire. More often, it's the little things. And so you can exercise as you're thinking about developing your own self as a leader, you can take advantage of the little opportunities to step into difficult moments or difficult conversations and turn around afterwards. And frankly, regardless of how the conversation goes, you can say, okay, that was an act of courage. That was a courageous act. And one of the beautiful and wonderful things about courageousness is that there is a flywheel reality to it. You do it and you catch a little momentum, and then you do it again and you catch a little momentum. And it's got a nice little self-fulfillment to it where you can get some momentum there. So on the courage side, my biggest encouragement would be to say, it doesn't have to be enormous to count, and it doesn't have to be enormous in order to grow. And I think that that's a really important thing to keep in mind. The insecurity side becomes very, very challenging because it's tough to see in the mirror. But what I would say to somebody to try to just be on the lookout from an awareness standpoint are the messages that you say about yourself, are they almost always in – one direction or the other. I don't mean that it has to be an even split, but but this has to do with self-talk. If my self-talk is almost always negative, you're planting in the direction of insecurity, because I'm guessing that probably you're not always being truthful when you have these negative things to say about yourself. And if you were to pause and sober up a little bit, and I don't mean that literally, but if you were to get out of the funk and somebody would say, is that really true all the time? Wait, this terrible thing you just said about yourself? You're like, well, no, probably not all the time. You're like, it's not okay. So it's not totally true. But then you look at it on the other side. And of course, there's the easy one on humility, which is to say, mm-hmm. Are all the messages about me positive? Now, there's not very many people that live it. That's kind of the gross arrogance. Yeah. There aren't a lot of people who live in that space. There really aren't. So the more, so you can ask yourself that question, but probably that's not going to land with a lot of people like, oh, my goodness, I'm always telling awesome stories to myself about myself. Like, okay. There's only a handful of people. I think the greater humility lesson is to say, let's not accept social norm humility as the standard. True humility is higher than that. What I mean by social norm humility is that most people are smarter enough not to run around the organization and tell everybody how great they are. But the issue of humility is not about what you say. It's your mindset. It's your inner, it is your inner dialogue about yourself and your relationship to other people. And so just because you didn't tell everybody how great you were doesn't mean you're humble. Humility has so many different aspects of it, and it's impossible. I mean, we could talk for literally hours about the different nuances, but it's tough to bypass the concept. And it gets attributed to a lot of different places. Most often it gets attributed to C.S. Lewis. I actually don't think that he's the originator. I think it's earlier than C.S. Lewis, but this idea that humility is not thinking less of myself, but thinking of myself less. So ultimately, how do we shift perspective? And I've had some of my most embarrassing moments when I really paused. I can think there was a time in my life when I was leading a big leadership development initiative within an organization, and periodically people would stop by because they knew it was coming up, and they'd say, hey, how's it going? And then I would, I'd give them the 2, 3, 4, 5 minute spiel about all the things we're working on and all the challenges we were up against. And I'd say, thank you. And one day I realized that there were many, many people who stopped by my door, asked that question, and I didn't even think to take an interest in what they had going on. And I'm like, oh man. And it's the really sad thing is that particular event that I'm thinking of, humility was one of the main things that we were addressing. So here I am developing and leading and literally doing the opposite of the thing that we're going to try to help leaders understand. So kind of noticing, where is my focus? If my focus is most consistently on ourselves, and I think that's the draw. I think there's a natural pull. It's a very strong magnet to get there. But just pay attention during the course of a day. How much time do we really spend being focused on other people around us? That's a pretty good hallmark of where we are from a humility standpoint. But it takes a conscious effort to even begin to look at those things.
Yeah, and the repetition is one of the things that I found. Like, oh, I will now be humble, and this is the way I will lead my life, right? And that rarely pans out. And then the second I blow it, then I'm back to negative self-talk and become insecure, and I shrink away. I just like go all negative on all those things. Yeah. So do give yourself grace as you try to implement those things. So
that's a good word.
One of the big themes of our show, and as a matter of fact, more and more in how I'm talking with other leaders, is just developing those small habits. I can say I'm riding James Clear's coattails on this.
Go ahead. That's a good coattails to ride. Do that. Yes.
They are multi-million dollar coattails. But I'm just trying to be 1% richer.
There we go.
Every day. But what, in the context of everything that we've been talking about, and I think those are some great encouragements and new ways to think, but if you had to give somebody a first step that someone can take in the next 24 hours where they can really marry some action to these new thoughts and put it into practice, what would you tell them or advise them to do?
Well, it's interesting to think about the next 24 hours part of that question. But I'm going to say something here that could apply to any of these things that we have been talking about. And it's basically get some traveling buddies. And it's true if you're in the C-suite or not, but ultimately there is a real advantage when we begin to walk down the road of personal and leadership development to have other people in that story. And when I say other, I'm thinking like two or three others. Mm-hmm. Who are two or three other people that you trust who would want to be consistently in leadership development conversations, mm-hmm. whose perspectives you have respect for? And to be able to say, and this is going to be the simplest example ever, but let's just say you had two or three other folks. You said, look, we're going to get together and have lunch once a month. And we're going to talk about how we're doing with regard to leading and what we've been observing and what we're thinking and where we might be succeeding and where we might be failing. This is very generic in that regard. But the point is, if you've got traveling buddies, here's what happens. Number one, there's accountability. So if there's accountability to talk about it, or you're reading a book or whatever it is you might be doing, mm-hmm. you know, if we're 5 to 6 times more likely to show up for a workout, if we're working out with somebody, then we're probably 5 to 6 more times likely to be in conscious leadership development conversations if we're doing it along with other people and not just inside our own head. So there's an accountability there. Matthew Kelly says that there are many things that make us unique as human beings. The need to be held accountable is not one of them. And so this is the thing that we all need. So the traveling buddies part starts with accountability, but it goes further than that, because when I let people into my story and they're mm-hmm. able to not only know about my actions, but I'm able to share some of the motives and perspectives that were behind that, I get a chance to get their feedback. So it's not just mm-hmm. that I'm going to show up to work on these things, but I get another person's perspective outside of mine, which increases mm-hmm. the speed of my learning. And then if we're all playing in this pond of reciprocity, I get to watch your story unfold too. I get mm-hmm. to learn from what you're doing. And so there's another aspect in which the learning process gets to speed forward. And so when I think about leadership development, it should be, in my opinion, a team sport whenever possible. And if you can find two or three folks, and this really doesn't matter, you can be in your first leadership job ever, or you could be in a C-suite, but to have two or three other people that you're traveling with on a consistent yeah. basis, who you respect, who are willing to have challenging conversations, who care about one another, but because they do, they're not going to spare one another the truth. That, no matter what aspect of leadership you're working on, there may be nothing more valuable than great partners to travel with along the way. There's so many positives that come out of having yeah. a small group like that that you can talk with.
Yeah, I 100% agree. That is one that's hard for some people to find. So in that, what I might say, because I believe that is going to be huge and can help you with those three qualities, is that just start writing down, like, the one step. You just write down some potential candidates.
Yeah, there you go. That's great.
And think through, and then maybe even why that person. What can they offer you? What can you offer them? Right. So there's some compliments. So I have some that they have experienced in other industries, or maybe that they've been in leadership longer. So I get wisdom. I give them new ideas and energy. I help them feel young. Or whatever that might be, but think of the names. I mean, get you a list of six. Maybe not everybody's willing to do that, because that is some level of commitment, and not everybody wants to be held accountable. They may not be ready for it. They may need it, but they may not be ready for it. And you can't force that on them, because maybe they're not in that same place that you are. But anybody can write those down and then follow up. Start make one call. Step into courage and have there's a tough some conversation. There,
yep. Yep.
Be humble during it, and lock the door so that it's secure. I think I got that right.
Right. Well, you got it.
Tim, I've enjoyed our conversation. This is helpful. Hopefully, we're thinking differently. This is seeping in. I know I need to probably just go for a walk and let this all marinate. But appreciate you. Appreciate the work you're doing. If somebody wants to know more about you, the Imperio. Or who not what, where would you send them?
Yeah. BeWorthFollowing.com is our website, BeWorthFollowing.com. And then the book, The Only Leaders Worth, Only Leaders Worth Following, you can find that on Amazon. That's probably the easiest place to find that there. So either of those two places.
Gotcha. I will link up those two in the show notes, as well as your LinkedIn profile. So if you're on the LinkedIn,
great.
Yeah. Yes, I did just say the LinkedIn.
The LinkedIn. I love it.
So if you're on the LinkedIn, also go follow Tim. He's a great follow. You'll know when his podcast is up and out, when those episodes come out, and he drops little nuggets there that'll, you know, blow your mind and interrupt your day, because now you got to go rethink your life. But it'll all be great. So thank you so much, Tim. And I hope that you'll come back. We'll have fun. We'll figure out something else to
would be happy
get
to
get around. Maybe you'll have some new ideas. Maybe I will too. But yes. Until next time, keep thinking, keep leading, and we'll catch you on the flip side.